Hi everyone, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reiser. Today I'm joined again by Hashibai.
Hello.
And today our special guest is Pranav Rastogi. Pranav, hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you guys?
Great, and what are you here to talk to us about today?
Today I'm going to talk to you about Azure Redis Cache Premium Tier.
Awesome, it's good to have you back. And we are going to get right to that, but first we're going to go through a little bit of news. It's been a busy couple weeks, what with the Connect event and a lot of stuff coming out from Azure. So we're going to go over a few of those items today. The first thing is we released updates to the Azure Preview Portal, the November 2015 updates. So these are all about making navigation easier to get through commands, like contextual commands about, you know, affecting resources, stuff like that. So you can take a look at that. We've got a new recommendation feature for Azure App Service. This is something where if you're running App Service, you can open up this recommender and it's going to tell you stuff like, hey, maybe you should scale up or scale down due to your resource usage, things like that. So it's kind of just be a little helper to kind of get you around making sure you're getting the best out of the service. The Azure PowerShell 1.0 is out on the PowerShell Gallery and WebPI. We did a preview of this, I think we announced it maybe a month or so ago, mm-hmm. So now you know you should be able to get this everywhere. In addition to the Azure PowerShell 1.0, we also announced the Azure SDK 2.8 for .NET. A lot of cool functionality here, including some new support for Docker, which is great, some updates to the mobile apps, templates. In addition to this, and somewhat different, is the preview of the Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer. This is a really cool cross-platform utility built using Node. It's essentially, you know, the if you want to be able to go into your storage account and add new containers and add new blobs or you know, change them, stuff like that, really great utility for that. And like I said, works cross-platform, so that's awesome. Cool. A bunch of other great stuff coming out with the 2.8 SDK. Then the last bit is some updates to Azure Mobile Apps. So Azure Mobile Apps has been being worked on for a while. It's kind of the next generation of Azure Mobile Services. And with today's announcement, or this week's announcement, we've added a bunch of functionality, including no-code tables and APIs for mobile applications. So if you remember mobile services where you could create a Node.js backend, you could edit the scripts for the and create tables right there in the portal, this functionality is basically being brought forward into mobile apps. So now, right from the portal, you can do that same experience of editing your backend scripts and adding tables and scheme and all that stuff. Authentication has changed for both mobile apps and web apps. It's kind of been simplified and shared across, so now it's the same sort of ability to authenticate with both web apps and mobile apps. So it's made a lot easier. Another cool functionality that's been released is a preview of file sync support. So for a while now, mobile applications and mobile services have had the offline support in their SDKs. And that supported whatever your structured data storage, whether you're using SQL or NoSQL on the back end. But you really had to do it more manually if you were actually doing files, so stuff that was syncing with blob storage. This is actually going to have sync that for you. And so this is a preview mm-hmm. in the managed SDK.
So this is syncing between your client and the backend?
Yes, it is. So and this is basically in addition to the normal sync of just the relational data that you did with the SQL database. Now it'll do files using that blob storage.
Cool.
A couple different changes to the REST API. There's now an API versioning check, so you need to include that on any of your requests. The SDKs will do that automatically, but if you're accessing the REST APIs not through the SDKs, it's something you want to look out for. And then the system properties have been renamed, so they used to be __, version, created, stuff like that. The underscores have just been dropped. Two last things for just the SDK, so on the server side. First of all, there's the Node.js server SDK. It's now in a new version of the alpha, so we're still playing around with it. It's not quite, you know, ready for prime time yet, but it's being played around with, and it's a little bit easier to use, and we've got some examples. And it's actually part of the Quick Start now, so if you go in and you create a new mobile app, and you go through the Quick Start process, Node.js is the option for the backend again. And then we've got the release candidate of the .NET Server SDK. So getting very much so closer to doing a general availability or a GA release of the .NET Server SDK. So that's our news for this week. So now we're going to go ahead and switch over to our main presentation. All right, and we're back. All right, Pranav, let's hear what's new with Azure Redis Cache.
All right. So we just released a public preview of the premium tier, and you know we're going to GA pretty soon. The premium tier is a new offering that we have in Redis Cache.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed for maximum scale and maximum enterprise integration. It also offers network isolation, so you can make your cache secure. So some of the comparisons that you can draw with the standard tier is, in standard tier, it comes with two nodes, so we offer high availability, but all the data is stored in memory in the cache. Mm-hmm. Now in premium tier, we offer data persistence. So you can optionally persist the cache data in like Azure storage. And this is useful in cases that, you know, there's a hardware failure that happens in the standard SKU, then all the data could be lost.
Sure.
Now with data persistence, now you can back up your data and you can choose to back up your data at, you know, some frequency, which is time-based, or Redis also supports AOF persistence. We can persist every write every second, and there are more knobs around it. So effectively what we have is the same Redis persistence, which is in Redis, the open source project, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is now being offered in Azure in the premium tier.
So now, if I understand correctly, with best practices for caching systems is you basically want to build your application as though that's not always 100% reliable, right?
Correct.
So is this is, you know, it's not necessarily making it 100% reliable, or is it really doing that because it can always pull that from storage for you?
So it can always pull from storage. As a best practice, you want to make sure that your apps are resilient to cache misses, and
sure.
they can fall back to a persistent store. In some cases where you don't care about the consistency of the data, like Redis offers you eventual consistency, so mm-hmm. eventually the data is going to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're fine sort of having a time window where, you know, you might miss some data, and it's okay. For example, if you're building applications where you're parsing logs,
mm.
and if it's okay to miss like 30 seconds of logs because mm-hmm. you know, because you have a very high volume.
Sure.
The benefit that you get over with having just Redis and not relying on a SQL persistent store in this log processing scenario is that you can process lots of logs quickly.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. Redis is like high throughput. It has a very high throughput compared to SQL. So you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons on what your application requirements are and sort of choose what technologies you want to
okay.
use.
Mm-hmm. Great.
We also allow you to deploy Redis caches inside a virtual network. And I have this wonderful diagram which explains what that means. So, you know, in the standard and basic tier, Redis caches are available on the public internet, so you can ping them.
Mm-hmm.
They have some protection that protects against DOS attacks, but it's still publicly addressable.
Mm.
Now, virtual network allows you to deploy your compute environment, which could be app service or could be virtual machines. And you can deploy a cache inside a network, which is only accessible by certain clients. Mm-hmm. So in this diagram, you know, I have these little sticks, which is the boundary of the virtual network. Inside it, I have a premium green tea, which could be a VM or an app service, an mm-hmm. app service environment. And then we have equal, which is, you know, our lightweight cache, which is super powerful. And both of them are inside the same virtual network. And this cache can only be accessible by any client inside the virtual network.
Okay.
So that's the benefit that you get.
So just to clarify, this virtual network, it's in my resource group. It's my virtual network.
Correct. It's a virtual network that you own as a customer. Yes.
And you will deploy some virtual machines hosting the Redis cache onto my network?
Yes. So internally, we have... So Redis is a PaaS offering, which mm-hmm. is a platform as a service. So. Mm-hmm. We manage the Redis servers on your behalf.
Mm.
When you create a new cache, we deploy the servers and put Redis on it and maintain Redis for you. And we okay. deploy a cache inside a virtual network, then we deploy those resources inside your virtual network.
So
that
basically,
you own as a customer.
So when you go to create your Redis cache, this is just an option like, hey, do you want to deploy this into this virtual
exactly.
network?
Exactly.
But still, you're managing those virtual machines for me, right? For
correct.
The
it's okay. still a managed offering. We still have our alerts that will get fired in case we detect the cache is unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, that's
all benefits
awesome.
That you have as a PaaS offering, you get with Redis inside a virtual network. And all features that you had in standard tier, like SSL support, memory management, perf counters, you'll get the same in virtual network as
great.
Well. So let's, and the last thing that we added in our premium tier was better performance. So these are deploying on better hardware. So for the same memory size, let's say you pick a 13 gig cache between a standard and a premium, the premium is going to perform much better. Like the CPUs are faster, it's going to have better throughput.
Okay.
So inherently, you'll get better performance in a premium tier as well.
And are like those specific metrics listed somewhere?
Yeah, so let me show you an experience on how do you create a premium tier with all these features. We'll look at like how do I access a cache in a
great.
Virtual network. We'll learn about clustering, and I'll share some numbers out
perfect.
On this.
Cool. Right? And just so you know, Pranav has actually been here and done an episode before, kind of a more of a 101 on Redis cache, so we'll make sure we link to that in the show notes.
Perfect. So this is the Azure Preview Portal. And I can create caches which are in premium tier using PowerShell, using Expat CLI, so using ARM templates. So I can specify my cache name. Cloud cover. This is the DNS name of my cache, the subscription where this cache is going to be in, the resource group, which is the logical grouping of all my resources, like my app service plus cache plus some storage can be in the same resource group. The region, cache is available in all regions, including China and US government. And then in the pricing tier, like you'll now start to see a new tier called premium. And premium comes in four options, P1 to P4. They go from 6 gigs to about 53 gigs. And then you know it has all the features of standard, plus persistence, plus virtual network, plus clustering. So I'll have to select the premium tier. And now this is an optional blade where I can enable clustering. So clustering is basically server-side sharding. So what happens today in the standard tier is like, let's say I create a single cache and I get 53 gigs. Now, if I want to create a cache workload which is about 100 gigs, I need to create two caches. But I need to maintain the sharding logic on the client. This is server-side sharding where I can now create clustering on the server. So I can create workloads of like 530 gigs. Plus, I can get better throughput as well because each shard can be accessed individually. And we'll see more on how to use Redis cluster. So I can specify the shard count. It is 10 for now. And if people want more, they can sort of call us and we'll enable that option. The next option is Redis persistence. So persistence is, again, a model where you can persist cache data to a storage account. Right now, we have a backup frequency. You know, we can change these settings. You can persist every 60 minutes to 24 hours. You can specify a storage account. For best performance, we recommend premium storage because we are writing data to a storage account, and if you're writing like 530 gigs, that's going to take some time.
Yep.
Storage account has to be in the same region as the cache to avoid the egress and ingress cost.
So it's essentially the way it works. So when you have 60 minutes, basically every 60 minutes, it's going to take a complete dump of what's in your cache and put it in storage?
Correct. Gotcha. Correct. And so that means, like, let's say after, you know, at 1 hour, 10 minutes, both nodes of the cache go down, let's say for a hardware failure, and the cache comes back up, it's going to repopulate the data that was last backed up to the storage account.
Okay.
And this is a storage key for the storage account. It's primary, secondary. The key point to note is, like, if you change these keys in your storage account, then you have to come back to this cache and, like, regenerate the keys so that the system can be operational. But you can do that as a transactional operation where each time you regenerate the storage key, you update it in the cache side as well.
And I imagine the option here is so that if you do need to change the key, you can go to your storage account, or you go here, maybe switch from primary to secondary, go to your storage account, change the primary, then switch
exactly
back.
As a best practice, 90 days, like, folks update, like, either primary and then make, you know, secondary as the key. So that's the storage key. And then the third option is optionally to deploy a cache inside a virtual network. So here I can select the virtual network I want to deploy this cache in. By default, we load up all virtual networks in the same region as you wanted to create the cache in because you know that's what makes sense.
Yep.
I can pick up my virtual network. You know, this is now getting into the virtual network territory where I can define subnets, and I can define rules within the subnet. I can just put the cache anywhere. So what here is happening is any feature that virtual network exposes, you can just use that feature.
Okay.
So on the virtual network side, you can define your NSG rules, what should be the inbound traffic that can access the cache, what's the outbound. So it's all up to you on how do you want to configure your virtual network.
These virtual networks sound so much more complicated than those four coffee stirrers we had in your diagram.
So that's why I always have this, you know, it's nothing too complicated.
Yeah, it's much easier.
Yeah, so this a subnet is basically, in a layman's term, a box of these things.
Okay.
And then you can put your cache over here. And then you can define a static IP, which will be used to access this cache. And we do some validation on what's the valid IP so that it's not in use.
Okay.
So that this is the exact IP you want to use to access the cache.
Great.
You can say OK. And so now I can sort of create the cache. Usually it takes about anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I already have a cache that I've provisioned inside a virtual network. And we'll see how we can access the cache. And what does it mean to be inside the virtual network? So let's go to this cache, which is inside a virtual network. I'm going to load up the properties page, which is going to say this is the virtual network this cache is in, and this is the static IP that I can use. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to try to access this cache locally from my machine. And just to show you that I cannot access this cache. And so I'm connecting to the static IP, which we just saw. And then this is the cache name. And this is a simple ASP.NET web application. It's setting a value in a cache and getting a value from the cache. But if I launch this application locally, my cache is deployed inside the virtual network. So if I go back to my boxes diagram, like my cache is here, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to access this cache from outside these boundaries of the sticks. And so I cannot. And I get an error saying that, you know, I cannot do the set operation because the connection is not available.
So effectively, if you wanted to be able to develop locally, you need to point at maybe a separate, different setup, like a temporary cache or a separate like test cache.
Correct.
For,
okay. Correct. And so what I've done also is I've taken the same web application and I have put it as an Azure web app, which is part of the app service. The web app is accessible publicly. I can hit the browse button. And again, it's just sort of setting the value and getting the value.
Okay.
So this sort of demonstrates the whole point that if you deploy a cache inside a virtual network, it can only be accessed by resources which are inside the virtual network
right.
as well. So when I tried to access it locally, it failed. But when I access it from a web app, which was inside the virtual network, it sort of worked.
Great.
And the web app, as you said, is still publicly accessible.
Right.
So this is basically, you know, virtual network. You have all features of cache which are available in the premium and standard here. I'm going to now show you sort of clustering and sort of explain you how it works and sort of show you some of the performance numbers that we have seen with cluster.
Great.
So I'm going to go back to the Azure preview portal, and I'm going to load up a cache, which I've created as a cluster. So what this cache has is it's a cache which is of cluster size 3. That means I have 3 shards mm-hmm. in the cluster. Each shard is a master-slave pair, and we'll handle the replication between the master and the slave so that you get high availability in the cache as well. So this is what a cluster looks like, which has 3 shards in it.
Okay.
Each shard is a master-slave. We handle the replication and the failover, so you get high availability. And then we use the Redis engine to shard the keys across the cluster. And I'm going to show you some of the performance improvements that you can get by sharding the keys in the cluster.
Now, I know you said this before, and you know, feel free to stop me if you're going to get to it anyway. But so I believe you said that you know you can individually access each individual shard if you want to.
Correct.
But is the general idea that you just basically access one endpoint and the Redis service kind of figures out where it should go?
Yes. So the way clustering works from a Redis perspective, there's nothing special to Azure, which is a Redis protocol, is when a key gets set in a Redis cluster, Redis is going to shard the key and redistribute the keys inside the cluster. The clients that you use to connect to the cluster are smart enough to figure out the keys have been resharded and where to look for the key. So from an application developer perspective, for the most part, you'll just connect to the cluster and that's it.
Gotcha.
You won't have to connect to the individual shards.
Okay.
From a performance perspective, what Redis has published some guidelines is if you structure your keys in a way following some patterns, then you can make sure that, you know, customers from 1 to 100 fall on shard 1. Customers from 100 to 200 fall on shard 2.
Mm.
And so now you can evenly distribute your load across the cluster, and you can get the 3 times the throughput.
Mm.
So a general principle is as you increase each shard, your throughput increases by a factor of, you know, into the number of shards. So let's say for a P4, you get a throughput of 250K ops per second per shard.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a cluster size of 3, that's like 750K
yep.
ops per second. So you can structure your data in such a way that you get this performance.
So do you have some control over how it gets sharded?
Let's see that.
All right, perfect.
So, you know, I just wanted to show you, like, this is what the cache looks like. You can see that it's a 18-gigabyte data that you can store in the cache, and which is 3 into 6 GB. So each shard can store 6 GB. So let's look at, and then we have perf counters, which are per shard, basically, that you can monitor what's the performance of the cluster and also the shard.
Mm.
So let's jump into the meaty part of the demo. So this is a demo which shows you different ways that you can use clustering, and there's more guidance on Redis site, but I just wanted to show you the most common ones. So there are three scenarios over here. I'm storing a key called demo cluster, and I'm just doing a set 10 times. And here the Redis engine will shard this demo cluster keys across the three nodes that I have, right? So that's simple clustering demo. I didn't have to connect to the individual shards. I just connected to an endpoint. The second key format shows that if you want to store all customers in a single shard, then you have to follow this pattern, like a curly brace specified by the key name with a curly brace, and then ID is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So here I'm just storing customers 1 to 10 following this pattern, and these customers will land up in a single shard instead of being distributed across the entire cluster.
Gotcha.
Right? So it's all up to you on how do you want to do it.
Okay.
The third pattern is I want to store, let's say I have a customer orders scenario. I want to store all the customers and their orders in the same shard because, you know, that's what I want to optimize for. So then you can use the pattern saying that a key with the demo customer colon ID, where ID is 1 to 10, and then the orders key is demo customer colon ID. So it's following this commonality between the two keys.
Okay.
And so Redis is going to, the way the hashing algorithm works is that these two keys will land up in the same shard.
Gotcha.
Okay. So let's run this demo. This demo is basically showing you that demo cluster will be sharded across the three nodes. Demo all customers will land up in a single shard, and demo customer and demo customer orders, the same keys will land up in the single shard. Right.
Makes
sense. So I'm just going to launch this application, and it's going to set the keys, and then it's going to get all the keys for me so that I can see the results. And then we're going to use Redis CLI to connect to the individual shard so I can show you how you can do that as well.
Okay.
So all the keys are set. In my application, I have downloaded Redis CLI. Right, so I'm going to connect to the same cache, and I'm going to connect to the 13,000 port. So now this is a cluster of three shards. Each shard is a master-slave pair. 13,000 is like the master, 30,001 is the slave for the first shard. 13,002 and 3 will be shard 2, and then 4 and 5 will be shard 3. And these are the non-SSL ports. So in the Azure portal, I had to set non-SSL equals true because I'm using Redis CLI, which doesn't support SSL.
I see.
Alternatively, I could have used S-Tunnel and still use the SSL ports, which are 15,000 and then 15,001, 2, 3.
Gotcha.
Right. So let's try to get demo cluster 1. So now I get an error saying that this key has been moved to a different shard. Now that's the Redis sharding logic which is coming into play. So I can now go to 13,004 and I get the value of demo cluster. If I do a keys command on 13,004, which will list me all the keys which have demo cluster 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see that I see keys 9, 7, 3, 1, 5. I don't see key 2.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see where key 2 is. It's on 13,002. So I'll connect to 13,002 and do all keys. So this showed you that demo cluster is sharded evenly across the entire cluster because I have three shards in the cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This was the first example that we looked at where demo cluster. The second example is like demo all customers.
Right.
So let's try to get the value for demo all customer, and I have to specify, let's say 1. And this is saying move to 13,000. So I'm going to connect to port number 13,000. And so I get the value of the key. And then I'm going to run a command called keys, which gives me all the keys which have the pattern demo all customer. And you see all customers have landed on this specific shard. So now I can optimize my scenario for that.
Right.
Now the third example that we want to look at is like I wanna store all customers and their order details on the same shard. And in my example, I had a customer ID from 10 to 20 are gonna be in a single shard. So let's try to get a value of colon 1. So this is demo customer. And so this has moved to port 13,004. Demo customer, let's do 13,004, right. So let's do a keys. Okay, so perfect. So that's what I wanted to show was, so now you will notice a pattern where like customer colon ID and the orders for that customer will be on the same chart. So customer colon 15, which is the customer details, and then 15 are the orders for that customer. Mm-hmm. Customer colon 13 is the customer, and their orders are on a single chart, basically. So that's what you get as a single unit is the customer and their information together on a single chart.
And basically, if you ran the same command against the other master slaves, you wouldn't see 15 anywhere because it has to stay on this one chart.
Correct. So we can go on like port number 13,002, and you will see that the list of customers is different. Like, I don't see 15 in this list.
Right.
And so between those two shards, the customers from 10 to 20 have been sharded such that their customer and order details are on the same shard.
Okay, so it sounds like you can go from kind of hands off, just shard it for me, to really as specific as you want as far as how things are sharded.
Exactly. And from a client perspective, you know, this is the code that connects to the cache. And if we sort of look into the connection, it is nothing. I'm just connecting to the cache name, and I'm specifying the cache password, which is literally what we have in Azure. And from an app dev perspective, you have the control as to how high you want to stay or how low you want to go in terms of performance optimization.
Okay. Yeah.
So for the first case, when I'm using the cluster key, the Redis cache will redistribute my data, my scale out or scale in my clusters?
No. So clustering, in our experience, what we did so far, like I created a cache with three nodes in the cluster, and Redis is going to distribute keys within the three nodes. Now, let's say you, after deploying your applications, you decide that you want to scale out the number of nodes in the cluster that you have. From three, you want to go to five. Then you can change the cluster size. So you can click this Redis cluster option where you can change the shard count.
Okay.
So right now I have the shard count of three, but you can change it to 10, you can change it back to 2, it's up to you, how do you want to.
But that doesn't do any sort of redistribution of your data when you change that cluster size.
Or when you change the cluster size, then Redis will redistribute your data once cluster comes back up.
Oh, okay.
Because then you know you have either more nodes or less node, and the data needs to be sharded accordingly.
Right.
So that happens after the fact that you have scaled in or scaled out as well.
So, okay. So I don't need to do what is called consistent hashing myself.
Correct.
Okay.
So from a client perspective, you know, that which is what the problem we had earlier in the standard and the basic SKU was there was no server-side sharding. So all sharding was in the client. And as an app developer, you had to figure out like what shard should this key go to? Like given I have like, you know, six nodes in the cluster. But now with the Redis clustering, it's server-side clustering, server-side sharding, where as a client or as an app developer, you don't have to worry about how to shard the keys. You just have to figure out like what's the workload of my application, how big a cache do I need, what's the throughput that I need, and just plan for that.
Okay.
And then just do a get set, which is what you're used to.
And so if you, let's say you spin up a cluster and you decide, you know what, I didn't set up persistent storage or clustering initially, is that something you can always go and turn on later?
Yes, that's a perfect question. So in our settings blade, so let's say you've created a cache, you can turn on persistence, and or you can change the frequency, or you can change the storage key. For clustering, you can only change the shard count, which is the number of nodes in the cluster. You cannot enable clustering on a non-clustered cache, simply because some of the features in Redis changes. So for example, Redis has databases support, which is not supported in clustering, and this is like the Redis implementation.
Okay.
So
if you were creating a new one, is there any reason why, and you thought, well, I don't know if I need sharding today, but I might need it down the road. Is there any reason why you wouldn't want to just turn on clustering and only start with one node, and then you have the option to scale up later?
So the only reason you do not want to enable clustering is if you're using some features which are not supported in Redis clustering, which is like Redis databases, which is a logical
separation. I see what you're just saying, right.
So if you depend on those features, then you'll have to think about either not using those features or it's your call.
I see, okay.
Virtual network is a create-only experience where you have to create a cache inside a virtual network. Mm. You cannot do it after the fact the cache is created, simply because we deploy the resources inside the virtual network
right.
and we need to set the IPs and stuff.
Okay.
And then we'll build upon this persistence features where you'll be able to come to the portal at some point and say, back up my cache or
right.
import and export data and
sure.
so on and so forth.
And the nice thing about it is, if you do follow that design pattern of, design your application so it's not, so it can handle that resiliency, then you can always go and change your cache and
right.
it should be fine.
Exactly. And so I just wanted to talk to you some of the performance characteristics and, the three points I wanted to highlight, and all this is public information that you can get from the Azure documentation site. Is between a standard and a premium tier, the throughput that you get for the same size cache is higher. So for example, for a C3, which is 6 gigs, in a standard tier, you get about 50,000 ops per second. And this is with a slightly loaded cache. Your cache data is 1 KB in size.
Mm-hmm.
For a premium tier for the same sized cache, it's 140K ops per second, so roughly a factor of 3.
It's a big jump.
It's a big jump, yes. The second thing is the maximum throughput that you can get. In a standard tier, it's 150K ops per second. In premium, it's 250K ops per second for a single shard. Now, let's say if you're a cluster of 10 shards, it's 2.5 million ops per second. And as I showed you, you can further optimize the sharding logic. You can have these patterns that you can use in your application to fully utilize the clustering. And the third performance characteristic is if you're storing data which is greater than 1 KB, let's say you store 10 KB, let's say you get a meg, performance on the premium tier is going to be higher than the standard tier
mm-hmm.
simply because it's better hardware, it's like more faster CPU, so you inherently get those performance benefits being on the premium tier.
Great.
So that's pretty much what I wanted to sort of cover and introduce to you guys, Redis Cache Premium Tier. It is an enterprise-ready solution. It has the best performance. There is Redis data persistence to prevent you from potential data loss. There's Redis clustering for caches of greater workloads, better performance. And there is deploying cache into an Azure virtual network for enhanced network isolation. And you can use the virtual network rules to further lock down your cache.
And now, is this currently in preview or has this GA'd?
So our current plans, this is currently in preview. We're going to do a GA on 12/1/2015. And the GA pricing will come into effect on 1/1/2016.
So effectively, we're recording this prior to GA, but it's pretty much when this is actually public, this will be GA'd.
Yeah,
so
this is the celebratory
video. Fantastic. Awesome. So where can people go if they've got more questions, if they want to see documentation, all that good stuff?
So the best place to go is the Azure Cache documentation. So Azure Cache Doc. Let's see. Yep. So this is the landing page for our cache service and all of the stuff that I've talked to you about, like explore new premium features, how do you create a cache with persistence, clustering, VNet. It has all docs. We have more samples on how you can use cache, and the sample that I showed you about clustering is available over here as
excellent.
Well. So this is the place to come to for all documentation.
Great. We'll include a link to that below in the show notes as well.
Perfect.
All right. And then do you have a Twitter handle in case people want to reach out to you?
Yes. My Twitter handle is RUSTD.
Can you give us one of these?
RUSTD.
Perfect. So you can always reach out to him as well if you've got questions or you want to say how much you love Azure Redis Cache Premium tier.
Yeah.
Or any of the tiers for that
matter. We'd love to hear what you think.
Great.
How you could improve it.
Well, Pranav, thanks for coming and telling us all about premium tier Azure Redis Cache.
Thank you.
It's great. Everybody out there, thank you for watching. Make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.